Wait, that is not Grizz.
There we go.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and all otherwise gendered individuals watching live. It is the Dog Days of Baseball podcast, episode number 2. As always, I am the voice of the generation, the head of We Are Wrestling, Pete Rosato. And to my right, I have one of the heralded members of the Backstage Brawl, Mr. I'm a New York City podcaster himself. The Big Grizz, by the way, man. New York podcast as well. And if you ain't on a train, get off.
Yeah.
But Grizz, it's been about 2 weeks since we last met up, and Al's still on assignment. We will have Al on for episode number 3. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to say starting next week, we will be going live with the trio, all three of us, myself, Grizz, and the Territorian, Alphonse Stevens. Thursday nights will be the night for the Dog Days of Baseball podcast. Moving forward, we'll cover everything we can in the weekend sports. And then every 2 weeks, we will pop back on for another episode. That way we have enough baseball information to get to you, because there's a lot going on in the world of baseball, but sometimes a week, not enough. So every 2 weeks, right here, Thursday nights, myself, Grizz, Alphonse Stevens will be bringing it to you. And before we get to it, Grizz, how you been? 2 weeks, long time, brother.
Been good, man. Lots of stuff to talk about. We got a lot that's going on here. And I guess I can kind of throw this in there for next week, but I definitely do want to talk about officiating, because I don't know if anyone saw the Yankee game yesterday when Aaron Boone got thrown out, but unacceptable. Very unacceptable how that happened. So I definitely want to get into officiating, but we're going to talk about that next week. Other than that, man, it's been great. You know, I know you got your show coming up. I would love to be there. Always support you, Pete. But wrestling's been pretty good. World of baseball's been pretty good. Sports in general, at least New York sports, have been very exciting as of late, with the Knicks in the playoffs, Rangers in the playoffs, Yankees doing well, Mets surprisingly turned it around, except for yesterday. We'll get into all of that today. But so far, it's very exciting for New York.
Yeah, it has been, as you said, this Friday. We're live right now. It's Tuesday, April 23rd. I want to give a quick shout-out my dad. Happy 66th birthday to my dad, April 23rd, birthday of Peter Sr. And also a big happy 5th birthday to my goddaughter. My goddaughter, Gianna, her birthday today as well. Big day. But as you said, this Friday night in the Bronx, We Are Wrestling. Our next show, Lo Que Paso, Paso. It's going to be an incredible night. I'm going to be exhausted because not only do I have my show on Friday, Saturday I'm traveling to Massachusetts to do commentary for an incredible show in Massachusetts called Daikaiju Pro Wrestling. And then on Sunday, I will more than likely be making an appearance. I won't be working, but making an appearance at Battle Club Pros Let's Go to show some love to Tony DiMasso, the production, the man behind all the production at We Are Wrestling and Battle Club Pro. You know, I don't want to spoil anything, but some big details going down regarding where production is going, what Tony's doing, some big news for him. So I'll be there to support him on this big moment as well. So a massive weekend. I am going to be exhausted. And then back to school on Monday. But, yeah, it's been a lot. As you know, we are live on Facebook right now. So for those of y'all tuning in, what's good? Michael Bostic, what is good? The big man in the chat with us. But, you know, you mentioned it. I want to kind of get into this pivot real quick. I know we hadn't spoken about this one, but yesterday's game, Yankees and A's, Yankees lose 2-0 to the Oakland Athletics, the Yankees' home series. But a lot of controversy around Aaron Boone getting ejected in the first inning, you know, and because a fan was yelling at the umpire, and the umpire thought it was Aaron Boone arguing with him, you know. We haven't heard anything come down from Major League Baseball head office yet, but I've got to think this has got to result in some kind of fine or some kind of disciplinary action for that umpire.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So for those who either don't watch the Yankees or just didn't see the game yesterday, first off, it was kind of odd. A 1 o'clock game on a Monday never rarely happens for the Yankees, at least. Never really a 1 o'clock game, usually seven or midday. So an early game for the Yankees yesterday. And it was just a weird day all around. Rodon pitched probably one of his best games so far in the season. Seven innings, gave up probably what, two hits maybe? I don't have the official stat line pulled up.
Yeah, I'll pull that up in a second.
Okay. So I don't forgive me for that. Don't have the official stat line pulled up. But Rodon
pitched best game though.
Best game, hands down so far. Best game, hands down. And in the top of the first, throws a slider. Slider hits the batter's foot. And Boone was questioning whether or not he went on the swing. Wasn't really questioning whether or not the player got hit, but more so, did he go? Gets into it with the umpire. Umpire just gives him a warning. They have a full focus on Boone. Boone is sitting there chewing his gum, gives him the thumbs up, doesn't say anything. Fan gets involved, throws him out. And then you can clearly hear the umpire say, I don't care who said it, you're out.
Yep.
So
even Ben's coach, Brad Ausmus, was like, he didn't say anything.
Right.
There was video evidence. Boone was saying he didn't say anything. By the way, Rodon, stat line, seven innings, one hit, two walks, four strikeouts, only threw 92 pitches in seven innings. So he probably still had another – probably could have gone another inning with 92 mm-hmm. pitches. I mean, I remember when guys were throwing 115, like it was nobody's business.
Yeah.
You know, and then we lost it in the we lost it in the ninth thanks to Gonzalez giving up two runs. Victor Gonzalez giving up that two-run home run in the ninth inning.
Yeah, I think – and since we're on the topic of that too – we'll get into officiating and fans too, because something else did happen where there was a robbery of a grand slam, I believe, on one of the games. I got to look up what exactly happened. But there
are you talking about the Rockies game?
The Rockies game. There was fan interaction.
Yeah, Jordan Stallings hit a home run and should have been a home run.
Should have been a home run.
Fan reached over, and this is where fans, like, I'm gonna be real with you. That fan in Colorado should be banned from the stadium, never be allowed to go to a game again. I'm sorry.
I agree.
You reached over the outfield wall. The ball would have hit the top of the wall and went over, so it would have been a home run. Okay? Right. But because you so badly want a souvenir ball, you reach into the field of play and, obstruct the outfielder's chance of making a play, even though he wasn't going to make the play. Right. But in the rule book, you obstruct the outfielder's chance of making a clean play. And at that point, now the ball continues to be in play, ruled dead. It's not a home run. Jordan Stallings should have had a home run right there. That game should have been in the Rockies' game. But it doesn't, and then the Rockies lose.
Right. I agree. So I think that's kind of what I wanted to preview for next, for when we get back on and all three of us are on. Yeah. Fans and officiating, because those are the two things – in my opinion, over these last 25 games, have been inconsistent with me. Fans, that's more of a personal complaint, but officiating, definitely, especially yesterday in the A's game with the Yankees. I can't for the life of me find out who was a home plate umpire yesterday, but strike zone was 3-4 inches off the plate. Ridiculous. But to be fair, it was called both ways for both pitchers, for JP Spears and for Carlos Rodon. So I can't complain too much, but we gotta address the officiating somewhere. But to get back on track with yesterday's game, the one thing that I seen yesterday that I think is going to be the Yankees' Achilles heel is relief pitching. And I think we alluded to this in episode one. The starters are doing their job. It's not like Stroman, Rodon, Nestor. These guys aren't going out there. Clark Schmidt has been unbelievable so far this season, which is a surprise for me. But these guys going out there, doing their job, giving you 5-6 shutout innings, 7 innings, you know, maybe giving up at the most, maybe 3 runs. Giving up 3 runs. And then relief comes in and we blow it. there's no reason why that game shouldn't have gone into extra innings yesterday. No reason whatsoever.
Oh, 100%.
So Gonzalez gives up a two-run home run, and now we lose 2-0. Now tonight we play at 7:05. Marcus Stroman on the mound tonight. I fully expect the Yankees to win this series, to bounce back after yesterday. It was just an unfortunate event. I mean, it's baseball. It does happen. But the one thing that needs to be addressed is our relief pitching. And relief pitching is going to be our problem in the long run.
Oh, yeah, 100%. By the way, just a quick error there. Jordan Stallings' home run was on Sunday night. It was the second game of a doubleheader against the Mariners. Okay. In the ninth inning, fan interference. Apparently the Rockies challenged it, thought it should have still been a home run. But the officiating crew in New York thought that the outfielder for the Mariners would have been able to make the catch had it not been for the fan interference. But yeah, there's a lot we want to talk about this week. I'm going to start here, though, while we still have everybody here. Grizz, I told you on our first episode we were going to do a little bit of a baseball trivia.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a question for you here that I think is going to be pretty interesting question. Let me just pull this up real quick for us here. Okay. So it's a home run based question for you, Grizz.
All right.
And I will say I did let Grizz pick the question he was going to answer. I didn't give him the actual question.
Nope.
But I gave him the subjects of the question so that he could pick which one he wanted to try and answer. We're going to try to do this every 2 weeks. So here's your question, Grizz. Who's the player that has the most career home runs without ever individually leading the American League or the National League in home runs?
Wow.
Has the most career home runs.
Has the most career home runs.
But never individually led either the AL or the NL in home run.
Huh. I feel like I know the answer to this, but I feel like it is loud and wrong. Man, never led the AL or the NL. Okay, so I'm already taking a lot of people off the table. Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey, like we're taking big names off the table. It's
right.
It's gotta be somebody I really would not expect. Who's in the NL and the AL. Sorry, technical difficulties.
Not the phone a friend coming through.
Nah, that's
not several. Randy calling you. I know the answer.
It's my 7-year-old niece calling me. She's probably off from school now.
She might know the answer.
Man, oh, she really might know the answer. That's crazy. That is a good one, Pete. Vladimir.
So again, for those of you watching live, again, the question is: who is the player with the most career home runs without ever leading the American League or the National League in home runs?
My stats for these trivia questions are going to be horrible. Okay, I got to take one guess. I wouldn't even say him. I'm thinking of Yankees. Don Mattingly. No, I wouldn't even say that. I don't know. You got me on this one, Pete. Wait, what's the answer here? And I bet you it's somebody else.
So the answer is Rafael Palmeiro.
Okay, I never would have got that. Never would have got that. I wasn't even thinking that far. Okay. That's crazy. He never
Rafael led. Palmeiro never led the individual league in home runs in a year. See here if I have
I gotta
pull up I his, even use the his stat. He has 569 career home runs. But he has never individually led the American League or the National League in home runs.
That's crazy. And just for the people out there, I do keep the iPad next to me. I did not use the iPad for these questions. So And you know what's crazy? I was just playing the show last night, and they were talking about Cuban-born players. So
yeah,
that's something.
Most people don't even remember that Palmeiro played in the National League.
Right, because it stumped me. That's a good
Palmeiro
question.
Palmeiro debuted with the Cubs, played for the Cubs from 1986 to 1988. He debuted as a Cub. I knew him as a Ranger and an Oriole. He started with the Rangers in 89, was traded from the Cubs to the Rangers, was with the Rangers from 89 to 93, then went to the Orioles from 94 to 98, then back to the Rangers from 99 to 03, and then obviously finished his career with the Orioles. He also, by the way, this is a trivia question we now will never ask, but I will actually put this in my book. He also finished his career with 2,831 games played, the most by any player who's never played in a World Series.
Wow. Okay.
So very interesting there.
That is interesting.
But, you know, he's actually the answer to a number of trivia questions, actually. If you think about it, you know, he had 47 home runs in 1999. But by the time we get to 1999, everybody's hitting home runs.
Right.
You know?
How many home run leaders did you have in 99? I mean, it's pretty deep. That pool's pretty deep.
Right. And so that's what I'm trying to see here. Let's see here if I can look up his home runs by year. So I'm looking at here. He didn't hit – his first big year with home runs was 1993, where he had 37. Then he got 39 when he gets to the Orioles in 1995. He got there in 94, but 95 he hits 39 home runs in 95, 39 in 96, 38 in 97, then jumped up to 43 in 98, 47 in 99, and then hit 47 again in 2001 and 43 in 2002. But during those years, I mean, that's when we're talking about the big home run years.
Yeah. Because if you look at 99, you got Alex Rodriguez, Sean Green, Carlos Delgado, Manny Ramirez, Chipper Jones, Greg Vaughn, Rafael Palmeiro, who we're talking about right now, Ken Griffey Jr., Sammy Sosa. And of course, number one was Mark McGwire with 65 home runs.
Right. And you hit 47. So it was like, you know, it's tough because he has a lot of great home runs. And of course, you know, another one of those names implicated in steroids and things like that. Mm-hmm. Four-time All-Star, three-time Gold Glover, one of only seven players, by the way, in MLB history to be a member of both the 500 home run club and the 3,000 hit club.
See, so, learn something new every day on here.
Interesting there, but let's go from veterans and old timers to our top topic of the day. The rookies are kind of struggling.
Yeah.
So far this year, Grizz. I mean, we just saw, you know, Al Leiter's son got called up by the Rangers and got absolutely rocked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing Yamamoto, who we'll talk about again in a little bit, but Yamamoto has not had a great first couple of starts. You know, and when you're looking at some of these other heralded rookies, you know, Jackson Chourio in Milwaukee, kind of starting slow. I mean, does have four home runs so far. Wyatt Langford, I mean, probably one of the best, hitting .250 with an on-base percentage of .312. But when you're looking at a lot of these guys, Colt Keith, you know, not really living up to the expectations there. So far hitting .173. You'd have to think that probably the best rookie right now is Nolan Schnell, the first baseman for the Angels, who's hitting, you know, as an on-base percentage of .295, but the kid's hitting like .160. You know, but he's been, you know, a kid that you're hearing a lot of. But the rookies just are not doing well. And, you know, Jackson Holliday, I think he's 1-for-30, mm-hmm. the number one rookie in baseball that got called up by the Orioles, 1-for-30 to start his career. Chris, I know that we're used to rookie hitters usually taking a little bit of time to acclimate, but it seems like even rookie pitchers are not doing as well as they've usually done in recent years. Are we attributing this to the rookies are just not as good as they think they are, or as baseball thinks they are, or are they just not ready for the league?
Well, it comes down to a couple of things, and I think it comes down to one argument that I always see on social media, where people say baseball is an easy sport, and it's not. It's not an easy sport, and these guys are proving it. These guys are probably no older than, I'd say, at the most, maybe 26, maybe.
Maybe not even. Younger. I think Schnaul is 22. I think Cole Keith himself is like in his early 20s. A lot of these guys are under 25, with the exception of a lot of the Asian players.
So for that, I'll give him 24. So we'll do it till 24. So a lot of these guys have been in the farm system. They've been coming up. They've done AAA ball. They've done AA ball. And it's different when you get to the big leagues. You know, you're going against guys who have played this game for now, what, at the most probably 2 years, 3 years. You're going against guys who have seen these pitchers, who have seen certain things, and you're going to make rookie mistakes. It's just going to happen. That's part of the growing pains of any sport. Now, I know there was a lot of hype behind Yamamoto. Yamamoto had a great showing at the World Baseball Classic. And now he's going against these big leaguers where he's getting hit around for the most part. His ERA is very high at this point in the season. He just got his first big league win, which says a lot. So it's not – the Dodger fans are questioning now, is he worth all the money that they paid him for? Who knows?
Right.
Then you have Holiday. Holiday is, like you said, the number one overall prospect. He's supposed to be the next big thing coming out, supposed to be the shortstop, supposed to be the glue, basically, to the Baltimore Orioles, and he's hitting 1-for-30. Again, growing pains. These are something that's going to happen. All these guys have this in common. Now, is it safe to say that one person is better than the other right now? No, because in the next – we're almost 25 games into the season. The next 25 games – we could be saying that about somebody else. Jackson Holiday might get on. Yamamoto might start getting hot. Snow might cool down. Who knows what's going to happen? But I think the thing is with this, and fans who are diehard fans of their team and watching their farm system, give them time. You know, as speaking from a Yankee fan from where we had Jason Dominguez and Austin Wells come up, we had them come up during a season where we knew we weren't going anywhere. The season was done
for right. us.
And when we got them and we saw what they were doing, now it's like, whoa, like we should have brought them up.
And Dominguez is out till I believe July or August.
July or August with that UCL. So who's to say what Dominguez is going to do? Same thing with Volpe. When Volpe came up, we got Volpe coming up. It took Volpe a minute to kind of get on. Now he's having one of the best hitting seasons he's having so far.
How many Yankee fans were calling Volpe a bust last year?
A lot. There was a lot of Volpe slander, and he won a gold glove, and now everybody's saying, oh, well, this guy is going to be one of the best shortstops we've had since Jeter. Look, I get it. A lot of people – oh, frozen? Nope. I get it.
Nope,
a lot
we're
of people
here.
Okay, cool. A lot of people want to believe in the rookies. A lot of people want to see them strive and be the players that they know they can be. But it's a long game. It's 162 games. Not everybody has a great rookie season. Not everybody's going to be a Derek Jeter. Just relax. You got to relax.
Yeah. And it's interesting because not hashtag trademark.
Right.
You gotta
still,
relax.
Stealing gimmicks out here.
Right. Listen, I'm over here with the coffee. You know, sorry, Wilkins. You know, I needed my coffee this morning. This afternoon, I should say. But the interesting thing is, right, you know, we talked so much, you know, we talked so much about the olden days of baseball, right? There were a lot of days where the rookies didn't come up till later in the season. The rookies came up later. The rookies got to perform in non-pressure environments. They got time in the minor leagues. But nowadays, we're starting to see this change in baseball where we used to see a lot in basketball. We used to see a lot in – we've seen this change in football too. Get the young kids on the field early,
mm-hmm.
right? In basketball, oh, no, you're not going to get a first-round draft pick and have him be just part of the bench rotation. No, you're going to have him in the starting lineup. He's going to be part of the starting five. This is what we're going to do. Yep. And in baseball, it's kind of become the same thing. We're not used to – listen, I'm not used to seeing players come up at 22.
Right.
Okay? I'm just not. You know, even when we think about when guys came up back in the day, you know, Bernie was signed on his 17th birthday, but didn't debut until he was like 20 something.
Nope.
You know, Jeter debuted a little early, but even then it was like, you know, these guys got time. You know, he debuted in the major leagues at 20 in 1995,
mm-hmm.
and then became the Yankee starting shortstop at 21.
Right.
And the thing is, I'm going to tell the truth as a Yankee fan. There were a lot of Yankee fans in 1995, in 1996, that wondered, is this kid even worth it right now?
Right.
Right.
Absolutely.
Let's not sit here and forget about the revisionist history that happened in baseball, right? We've seen it with Volpe right now. Everybody and their mother was calling Volpe a bust last year because why? He's not Derek Jeter. Forgetting that it took Jeter a good 2 or 3 years to really solidify himself as a force. Okay. There's a reason we had guys, you know, to back him up in the infield. There's a reason we had guys like Luis Soho on the freaking roster for so many years.
Yep.
Right? Because very early on, we wondered, okay, is Derek Jeter going to be able to hold up this position? And again, we saw the age of young shortstop. We saw the age of A-Rod and Garcia Parra and Jeter, and that was great. But it's very rare that you see a 20-year-old come up and dominate in baseball, right? Now, here's the thing. As of right now, this is like as of right before the weekend, the top rookies in baseball are not the rookies that you expected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, don't get me wrong. There are a lot of people out here who are huge, you know, farm system nerds, and that's great. They probably know, they're like, oh, I know this guy. I know who you're talking about, right? But everybody was talking about Jackson Holliday,
yeah,
Wyatt Langford, mm-hmm. Jackson Churio, Yamamoto coming in as a rookie, stuff like that, right? But so far to start the season, the top rookies are Michael Busch, first baseman for the Chicago Cubs,
yeah,
hitting .317, 6 home runs, 13 RBIs with 9 walks, leads the Cubs in home runs and RBIs, right, and barely strikes out.
Right.
You want to talk about Baltimore Orioles? It's not Jackson Holliday they're talking about. They're talking about Colton Cowser. Okay. Who's hitting .400 with 4 home runs and 15 RBI. Okay. You want to talk about Yamamoto, but we should be talking about Shota Imanaga, also with the Cubs, who has only given up 9 hits in his first 3 starts, has not surrendered an earned run, has 16 strikeouts in 15 innings, and a .158 batting average against. Okay. We should be talking about Jared Jones in Pittsburgh. Jackson Merrill, who's making a lot of people forget that San Diego had Juan Soto, not because of his power, but because the kid's hitting .333, okay, and playing incredible defense in center field, which, by the way, was a position he'd never played before. You know, in what is likely a lost season for Miami, they've got Max Meyer to look at.
Yeah.
You know, 2.12 ERA, 17 innings pitched, 14 strikeouts. Okay. Joey Ortiz in playing infield for the Milwaukee Brewers, playing both second and third base. You know, and then you got Mason Winn, the shortstop for the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, as well as a bunch of relief pitchers that are out there.
Right.
Know, such as, you know, and I don't want to forget about Evan Carter.
Evan Carter's
really
another guy.
Showed out in the World Series run last year for the Rangers. But he's been doing great. Mason Miller, I hate to say it because, you know, shows up in our series this week, I should say. Mason Miller, the closer for the Athletics, is incredible. But these are the rookies that are so far having the best April. And it's not the kids that we were talking about. It's not the Jackson Holidays. It's not the Yamamotos. And speaking of Yamamoto, Grizz, I want to go here. Everybody was mad at the Mets for not signing Yamamoto. Everybody was mad at the Yankees for not being able to sign Jordan Montgomery, for not being able to sign Blake Snell.
I'll be the first one there. That's me.
But based on the early returns, Blake Snell's got a 7.11 ERA right now.
Yeah.
Montgomery just came up, and his first start wasn't great. And Yamamoto has been more of a head-scratcher than an ace for the Dodgers. Did the Mets and the Yankees dodge a bullet by not getting Yamamoto, Snell, and Montgomery? Or is this just, you know, an April blip that we're still going to be looking at in September saying we should have done this?
Well, let's break this down here. So in those three guys' cases, well, all three of them are in the same position. They would have been signed for an X amount of money. There was no trade needed for any of these guys. All these guys are free agents.
Correct.
So Snell, I guess at the time, wanted too much money, and that was more so the Yankees. If the Yankees go that way, they're hitting the panic button. And the only way I saw Blake Snell coming to this team is if Gerrit Cole was going to be out longer than 4 months. That's where I saw that happening. Montgomery was the same scenario where it was, if Gerrit Cole is out for a longer period of time, this is break glass in case of an emergency. Now, when it comes down to Yamamoto was rumored and linked to the Yankees for a very long time since the start of the winter. Unfortunately, he went to the Dodgers with Shohei Ohtani. Shohei Ohtani now no longer is doing the two-way thing. He's more so just playing one position. And that worked out for him in the long run. Because that's, to me, in the Yamamoto race, the winner of that is Shohei Ohtani. It's not the Dodgers. It's not the Yankees. It's not the Mets. Nobody, to me, is a loser in that Yamamoto situation but the Dodgers right now. Because Yamamoto is not proving up to be that $300-some-odd million contract that he's worth. Now, it could be an April blip. He could turn around and have a hell of a May or a hell of a June. We know by the time the All-Star break comes, that's when real baseball starts to get played, by that mid to late August going into September and that push to October. That's where you're going to see who's going to be the teams. As far as Blake Snell goes, I don't know if this is – okay, this is a recent – updated stat here. So Blake Snell, who signed for a 2-year, $62 million contract to the San Francisco Giants, in his three starts, he had an ERA of 11.57. That's just ridiculous. For somebody who's a two-time Cy Young Award winner, who is supposed to, I guess you can, for the Yankee fans out there, who's supposed to be on par with Gerrit Cole, who is equally supposed to be the same pitcher, at an 11.57 ERA at $62 million. Yankee fans, I am here to tell you today, we dodged a bullet with that. In the first three starts.
First start against the Nationals, only went three innings.
Right.
Gave up three runs, three hits in three innings. Then he went four innings against the Rays, seven runs on six hits. And then his most recent start, which was this past weekend against the Diamondbacks, five runs on nine hits in 4 2/3. The guy has not gotten out of the fourth or fifth inning in any of his starts. By comparison, last year with the Padres, went 14-9 with a 2.25 ERA, gave up 45 earned runs in 32 games. He's given up 15 earned runs in three games this year. He gave up 45 all of last year. He's already a third of the way to the amount of runs he gave up last year.
And this is somebody who, at least in the in an alternate universe for the Yankees, this is somebody who would have been our ace if Gerrit Cole was out longer. This is somebody who we would have looked to for a longer period of time. Now, would it have been different? Maybe, depending on, you know, if things are going the way that they're going for the Yankees right now. Because we could sit here and talk about the Yankees bullpen. It's not necessarily the best, but it's not the worst either. It could be a lot worse for us. But with that ERA in their first three starts and giving up those runs, inexcusable. Now we flip it to Montgomery. Montgomery now, August 19th against the Giants, he pitched six innings, four hits, one earned, one home run with an ERA of 1.5. I'm okay with that. I'm honestly okay with that. That's probably his best start so far. In the
his only start. He had just gotten activated.
Okay, so this is his only start. Okay, so this is his only start. So far, no issues. I really don't have any issues with that. I mean, you gave up four hits. It's going to happen. It's a long season. It's going to happen. I guess for me is I have to see where he progresses from here. Now,
you know you who to, I'm mad at?
Who's that?
I'm mad, and listen, I didn't want Blake Snell.
Okay, that's fair.
I didn't want Jordan Montgomery. The one that I wanted and the one that has been performing the best is Dylan Cease.
Yes.
Dylan Cease has had five starts so far.
Mm-hmm.
Five starts, has pitched 29.2 thirds of an inning, has given up nine runs, six earned runs, 11 hits in 29 2/3 of an inning, 35 strikeouts, pitching to a 1.82 ERA for the San Diego Padres, again traded from the White Sox to the Padres. His worst start was his opening start of the year, where he went 4 2/3 against the Giants, gave up three runs, two earned on only two hits, but struck out six in 4 2/3. Since then, two runs on four hits in six innings with seven strikeouts in a rematch against the Giants on April 5th. Mm-hmm. Then two runs, none of them earned, with seven strikeouts in six innings against the Cubs. One run with seven strikeouts in six innings against the Brewers, the only negative there, five walks. And then one run on one hit in seven innings to eight strikeouts against the Colorado Rockies. I mean, this is the man that I wanted. This is the guy that I was very upset we did not get and did not get a shot at. There was a lot of talk about getting Dylan Cease. And this is the man that is really out there performing right now.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. I was very excited. Well, excited is the wrong word. Intrigued. When Dylan Cease was on the table for us, and I was very disappointed when we couldn't come to an agreement on who to trade. This is Glaber's last year of his contract. I don't know if they wanted to give up Glaber. I don't know if Glaber was involved in the trade talks, but I think for me, seeing the numbers, I probably would have let that go. I know Glaber is a beloved second baseman. I know that he is, you know, wants to be a Yankee, wants to play for this team, but at the time, it just looked bleak for us in our bullpen. And Dylan Cease, being the pitcher that he is, and what he can bring to a team, especially late in games, is something that the Yankees personally needed at the time. Now, I agree with you. Again, the numbers speak for themselves. The numbers don't lie. He's had one game where it's kind of questionable with those five walks. That's the only thing. Other than that, he has been lights out. But flipping over to that with Yamamoto and the Dodgers, and the Dodgers are kind of struggling as of late, and we'll get into power ranking soon. But you have Yamamoto, who honestly just got hit, hammered by the Mets. I mean, the Mets just figured this guy out from the jump. And his start, because I had it pulled up.
I mean, he's had two decent games.
Yes, he's had two decent games. And this is not to trash him. Now the Dodgers are sitting at 13-11. They're getting ready to play the Nationals today at 10-11.
And, but no one thought the Dodgers would be 13-11. Like no one
thought
this close to 500.
No. Nobody thought that. They thought they would be at the what the Yankees
record are. At least double over 500.
At least double. Yeah. Yeah. And you're talking
Now Yamamoto's stat line, when you look at the actual stat line for his game against the Mets this past weekend, the stat line doesn't look incredibly terrible, right? Four runs, three earned, seven hits, six innings, did strike out nine, right? So rough, yeah. Nine strikeouts is really cool, but you know, the Mets hammered the Dodgers in that game. Previously against the Padres, three runs on four hits in five innings, six strikeouts. And then against the Cubs and the Cardinals, each game he went five innings, gave up no runs, eight strikeouts against the Cubs, five strikeouts against the Cardinals. Probably his best game was against the Cardinals, where it's no runs, no hits. I mean, sorry, no runs, two hits in five innings with five strikeouts against the Cardinals. And then that first game against the Padres, he lasted one inning, gave up five runs on four hits, struck out two. So, I mean, the stat lines haven't been overtly terrible. It's not like he's giving up five runs a game. It's not like he's giving up, you know, 1,000 hits a game. But, like, this is definitely not the pitcher that the Mets, the Yankees, even the Dodgers thought that they were getting based on what the hype was and how heralded he was coming over. This is giving – I hate to say this. This is giving more Kei Igawa vibes than Daisuke Matsuzaka vibes, right? Because when, you know, you look at those two pitchers, I mean, Daisuke had a rocky start and then had a pretty decent career. Kei Igawa kind of heralded to come over and then was a complete bomb.
Yeah. I think in the long run, at least speaking for the two teams that kind of lost the Yamamoto sweepstakes, which is the Mets and the Yankees, I don't think that we are too pressed about not getting Yamamoto. I don't think they're too pressed about it. I mean, right now, I think he's only won one game on the season so far. And at the most, he has 8 Ks away from home. That's his most right now. And like you said, the numbers don't jump off the screen to you. It's not this is the pitcher that's worth $300 million. This is more so a regular pitcher that you would get through, you know, free agency or, you know, whatever the case may be. The numbers are going to project the season, basically. Right now, the Dodgers started off hot. They had a lot of hype behind them. This is pretty much their year. Now it's looking like, okay, we're about to be a month in. Is this the team that we thought they were going to be? And right now, the answer is no. This is not the team they thought they were going to be. Even Dodgers fans are disappointed with their record at the moment. And if anybody says otherwise, then they're lying.
Yeah, you know, when most people saw that the record the Yankees ran out to, they thought that that'd be what the Dodgers are doing. And again, like you said, Yamamoto's stats, like you said, don't jump off the page. They also don't jump off the page in the opposite way. Like I said, he's not getting shelled
right
every game. It's not like the guy can barely get out of the third inning. It's not like the guy's giving up 5, 6, 7 runs a game. But again, these are also definitely not the stats you thought you were going to get out of the guy that you signed $300 million contract. You know, granted, he's only making $5 million this year.
Right.
Right. Jumps to $10 million, then $12 million. But this is not the contract. This is not the guy you signed to that contract. Right. Same way, right. I don't think Snell is the guy you signed to the money that you signed him for based on his stats and things like that. And that's where you worry. I mean, right now, yeah, if I'm the Mets, I've had some bad starts, but I also don't want to have to deal with Yamamoto having started. If I'm looking at the Dodgers starting rotation right now, Tyler Glass now has been their best pitcher.
Absolutely.
And Tyler Glass now has been absolutely killing it right now in the starting rotation.
And to be honest with you, if I'm the Mets, I mean, Jose Quintana hasn't been doing bad for the Mets either. I mean, looking at the stats right now, he's 1-for-2 on the season, a 4.21 ERA, 20 Ks with a whip of 1.6. I mean, you're pretty much his numbers this season match up with Yamamoto's almost. They pretty much identical. So, I mean, for what it's worth, would you want to have a $325 million rookie who's probably going 5 innings, 450 ERA, not really giving you much leeway, and you're constantly going to your bullpen? Or you have Jose Quintana, who's pretty much giving you the same thing, but giving you more room for guys to work. So, I mean, Mets fans, I'm here to say don't panic. You guys have nothing to worry about. Same thing with the Yankees. You have nothing to worry about. I know a lot of people wanted Blake Snell. I know a lot of people wanted the Jordan Montgomerys of the world. And the only person at this particular juncture that you can honestly say get upset about that we didn't get is Dylan Cease. That's probably the only gripe Yankee fans I can honestly say, yes, I understand, because at that particular time, if you're willing to trade, especially if you're not willing to sign Gleyber back for however long he wants to come back for however amount of money. Remember, we have Juan Soto, who's in free agency, and Gleyber Torres. So with those two guys heading into free agency after the season is done, who are you going to sign back? Are you going to sign Soto long-term, or are you going to sign Gleyber? Who's willing to take a pay cut? Who's, you know, so if you could just avoid that and only focus on Soto, hey, the trade would have made sense in the long run. But I get it. Season didn't start at the moment. You didn't know what was a for sure thing. Now you kind of know. But
right.
So far.
And then, you know, obviously LeMahieu's out.
Yes. You know, and that's another thing, right? Big
LeMahieu, thing. LeMahieu's out. Peraza's on the 10-day DL. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, who would have played second base, right? Oswaldo Cabrera would have been the starting second baseman, which would have lowered the bench. And granted, listen, maybe we could have made it last for a little while, because I would have loved to have a starting rotation of Stroman and Rodon and Cortez and Dylan Cease. Like, my God, talk about a rotation that would have been headed by Cease. And then you go from Cease, Stroman, give Rodon the number 3 spot right now, which lowers the pressure on him. Cortez the number 4 spot, which lowers the pressure on him.
Right.
You know, Clark Schmidt taking the 5th spot. And then when Cole comes back, you're talking a starting rotation headed up by Garrett Cole and Dylan Cease. Then you have Stroman at the 3, and then Rodon and Cortez at 4 and 5. That's probably one of the best 4-5 pitchers in baseball when you just think about the stats on paper of Rodon and and Cortez, and then you still got Schmidt.
Yeah.
So you have the ability to run a six-man rotation or have a long guy, and then with Loaiza out right now, that would have allowed you to have Schmidt be the long relief guy, your spot starter. So instead of you having to go through these bullpen days, which I hate, by the way, I hate that in baseball. I hate those games where they're just running through seven bullpen pitchers in one game. Everybody pitching one inning and getting freaking smacked out.
Right.
You could have had Clark Schmidt be your bullpen guy, come and give you five, six innings on the days when you want to rest your starters, and still have six solid starters, which, by the way, Yankee fans, you may remember, that was Ramiro Mendoza's job.
Yeah, sure was.
You know, that was the job of guys like Ramiro Mendoza, who was that long relief guy, would come in and give you a good two, three, four innings and be solid because he was a starter, right?
And now you got relief guys not even going an inning.
Right. That could have been what Ian Kennedy could have become. That could have been what Phil Hughes could have become after you guys screwed him up. Right? Let's not talk about how we could have had the heir apparent to Mariano in Jabba if you knew what you were doing. But anyway, moving on. Talking about just really quickly, last note on the Dodgers. Glasnow, I mean, six starts, by the way. Mm-hmm. His worst start was against the Nationals back on April 15th. He gave up six runs on eight hits, got smacked around in five innings, only struck out five. But the game before that against Minnesota, April 9th, three hits, no runs, seven innings, 14 strikeouts against Minnesota, seven strikeouts against San Francisco before that. And then the start against the Mets that we just saw on April 21st, 2 days ago, no runs, seven hits over eight innings, struck out 10.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's got 36 strikeouts in 26 innings, 22 hits. In 26 innings. And then, by the way, a name Yankee fans might hate, James Paxton, hasn't been the worst over there. I mean, his last start was the worst, eight walks in five innings. But other than that, no runs, four hits in five innings, two runs, three hits in six innings, and then three runs on three hits in five innings. The only thing that killed him against San Diego was, again, eight walks in a game that they gave up 18 walks in total. But Paxton also pitching to a pretty decent ERA in a Dodgers uniform.
Yeah, you got you got Paxton sitting at a win-loss record of 2-0, 2.81 ERA and 10 Ks with a whip of 1.5. I mean, you can't ask for anything better than that.
Yeah. Let's get to the power rankings here. And as you said, I mean, the Dodgers, I think a lot of people expected the Dodgers to run away with the season.
Yeah.
Dodgers are 13-11. By comparison, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the Kansas City Royals are 13-9. The Mets are 12-9. The Boston Red Sox, who no one thought would be anything this year, are 13-10.
Yeah.
Right. And so the Dodgers, who everyone thought was going to run away with baseball, are 13-11.
Yeah. This is interesting. And this is only 23, 24 games in. Just top 10. I'll rattle off the top 10 real quick. You got.
Real quick, I'm going to let my dogs in.
All right. Well, I'll do from 15. We'll go from 15. So 15 is the Diamondbacks, which are the defending National League champions. They were previously at 14. They are sitting at 15 so far for the power rankings. 14 is the Boston Red Sox. 13, you got the Reds. 12, you got the Blue Jays. 11 are the defending champs, Texas Rangers. Mets are sitting in the top 10. Cubs are at 9. You got the Royals at 8, Phillies at 7, Dodgers at 6, Milwaukee Brewers, top 5, which I had them picked to be a sleeper team this year. Cleveland Guardians at 4, Baltimore at 3, Yankees at 2, and the Braves at 1. So, here's the deal here. The deal is this. The Braves have lost their starting pitcher and are sitting right now currently at the top of power rankings. Max Fried has a 7.71 ERA. Spencer Strider, of course, out for the season. Sean Murphy has played exactly one game.
And Freed's a beast. Don't get me wrong. Freed's a beast.
Absolute beast. Absolute beast. Then we have our team, Yankees, who right now, they were a tough loss yesterday, but for the most part, with all the injuries we have going on and the plate discipline, our plate discipline is a little lacking. Aaron Judge hasn't got on just yet. But for the most part, this team's defense and pitching and starting pitching is what's kept them in game so far. So there's light at the end of the tunnel. Aaron Judge is going to get on. He's a vet. He's going to get on. I know right now he got booed out of Yankee Stadium a couple of days ago in one of theirs. And I think in the Blue Jay series or the Tampa Bay series.
Yeah. He went 0-for-4 strikeouts.
Yeah. So understandable. He knows he's not playing that well, but it's going to get on. You got Baltimore on the other hand, another young team. So you got them getting on, hitting their stride. And then you have Cleveland, who surprisingly, when we played them, a very good team, very good hitting team.
Let's really punctuate that point. The best run differential in baseball, plus 52. Okay. And that's surprising considering they have a crap pitching squad. Okay. Their best pitcher in terms of ERA as a starter, okay, it was Shane Bieber who went down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you get away from that, you're talking about Carlos Carrasco, who's in four starts pitching to a 3.44 ERA, has given up 16 hits and 7 earned runs in 18 and a third innings, 12 walks to 16 strikeouts. Okay, other than that, you got Tanner Bibby, who in 5 games is pitching to a 4.44 ERA, has given up 12 earned runs and 27 hits in 24 and a third inning. Logan Allen, who's given up 15 earned runs and 28 hits in 26.2 innings. Their starting pitchers not named Carlos Carrasco are at 4.44, 5.0, and 5.06 ERAs. All that being said, they've only given up 72 runs and they've scored 124. They are 6-3 at home and 10-3 on the road. They have, if I'm not mistaken, the best record in baseball. They have the best record in baseball at 16-6 and the best run differential at plus 52. The next best run differential is plus 38, and that's for the Braves.
Yeah. And you know what? Cleveland to me is like Tampa Bay. They're a team that hits their stride. They're a team that you can't really count out. But then when it gets down to the playoffs or, you know, the wild card or wherever they get, or even earlier than that, midway through the season, they start to crumble. Right now, they have the best start they have going right now. Hands down, the best start. Like you said, you've got overall, they're on a 4-game winning streak. They're 16-6. They're at the top of the Central standing. I mean, the Central's not really much of a much to talk about, where you have Kansas City, Detroit, Minnesota, and Chicago. And to find their schedule, they play. They're a great road team. And in baseball, that's the thing. You have to be able to win on the road. And they're finding ways to win on the road.
You know what's interesting? There are three teams who have an incredible road record, by the way. Cleveland has a 10-3 road record.
Right.
There are two other teams in baseball with a 10-3 road record. The Milwaukee Brewers, who are 14-7 leading the Central, who are 10-3 on the road. And the Boston Red Sox, who are 10-3 on the road, but 3-7 at home. They have 10 of their 13 wins are on the road. The only three teams with a 10-3 road record, Detroit has a 9-3 road record. When you're talking just about, you know, the interesting thing with Cleveland and why I have a problem with Cleveland being so high in power rankings is I see the Yankees. I see the Yankees from recent seasons. I see all power. They're going to bash their way through games. Mm-hmm. But if there's one thing we learned as Yankee fans over the last couple of seasons is you cannot rely on power pushing you through games, especially when you get to the latter half of the season, especially when you get to the playoffs. You need to have solid pitching. You need to have a shutdown bullpen. And the problem is I don't see the Cleveland Guardians rotation taking them as far as they're hitting it. And the hitting is going to fall. I mean, there's one thing we know in baseball is every good hitting team is going to hit a cold streak.
Yeah. I mean, right now their slugging is 0.411 and their OPS is 735. Again, like you said, the team is hitting well. The team is hitting well, but pitching. Now, if you go to pitching, right now they're sitting at a whip of 1.22 as a team. The ERA overall as a team is 3.3. Now, you're saying
to us. And if you take Shane Bieber's stats out of that. Take Shane Bieber's stats out of that. By the way, they have three quality starts.
Right.
They have only three quality starts so far in the major leagues, which, by the way, is tied for last. And two of those quality starts came from Shane Bieber before he was lost to Tommy John surgery, right?
Right.
So that, outside of Shane Bieber, they have one quality start. Just one.
Just one.
It's been their bullpen and their hitting attack. But, you know, if that rotation continues to pitch the way that they're pitching, that bullpen is going to get taxed very, very quickly.
I mean, and the numbers don't jump out the screen to you from the team leaders. The team leaders, you got Logan Allen with 3 wins. You got Tanner with 4.44 ERA. And that's arguably it's not the lowest. The lowest is Carlos with 3.44. Tanner, again, on the strikeouts leader at 26. Yep. Emmanuel Clause with 6 saves, and you got Scott Barlow with 5 holds. So, I mean, this is a team that you can't hit against them. It's shown here in the numbers. You can't hit against this team. Now, relief and closing might be the issue where you're not going to late in games. If it's a close game, you're not really going to hit off this team. But starting pitchers,
right, and that's
you
the thing.
You can get hits off these guys. So I think the plan of attack when you play Cleveland is this. We have to come out, whatever team it is, we have to come out and just hit. We have to come out and hit because we can hit against their starting pitchers. It's the relief and closing. If it comes down to it, if you are not at least up by, I'd say, 3 runs, you're not winning that game. It's just not happening. The relief is going to come in, and they're going to give their guys a shot. Closing, and if they end up having to go to their closer is going to close, ironically, close the door on you guys. And now you're sitting there looking like, well, what just happened? We were up by a run or 2 runs. For Cleveland in general, it's going to be their relief pitching and their closing that's going to get them through this season. But it's a long season, and it's going to eventually catch up to them.
I think it's going to be very interesting this weekend when they play the Braves.
Yeah, I think that's something that you can question kind of on both sides because both teams have lost their ace. So now you look at the pitching, and they're pretty much the same team.
It's interesting. The Braves are right now leading the NL East at 15-6. Granted, the Philadelphia Phillies right on their tail. Right. But the Braves are 15-6 with the second best run differential in baseball at plus 38. Mm-hmm. All of that being said, right? All of that being said, Sean Murphy has played one game, as you stated. They've lost Spencer Strider, as you stated. Mm-hmm. Max Fried has an ERA above 7.
Yep.
Austin Riley is only hitting 259, and Acuña Jr. only has one home run.
Right. So it's
how are they in first place?
It's baffling to me because that's honestly not the start you would expect Atlanta to have. And even I'm looking at the team leaders here. You've got Chris Sale, who's sitting at a 4.38 ERA with 27 strikeouts.
Right.
Now, that's high for Chris Sale. That's a high ERA. That's not where you want Chris Sale to be. You got Jimenez at 5 holds. You got Iglesias at 7 saves. And AJ Minter, who has 3 wins. And then if you look at everybody else, you've got Charlie Morton, who's at a 4.7 ERA. I mean, for the most part, again, they're the same team as Cleveland. You're going to hit off these starting pitchers.
Right. And they have an offense. Like I said, Riley has not turned it on yet. Mm-hmm. Acuña hasn't turned it on yet. Matt Olson, to a degree, even though he does have 3 home runs and 13 RBIs, he's only hitting 222,
mm-hmm.
right? Ozzie Albies is out with a fractured toe. You know, so it's like, what are we, you know, what are we doing here?
Right. And now,
you know,
the slugging overall is 4.7. And you got
right. OPS. Their best hitter right now has been Marcelo Zuna. He has
right.
9 home runs in 21 games, hitting 325. And by the way, Michael Harris, their center fielder, is lighting it up right now. 307, 10 RBIs in 21 games. Only, you know, my biggest issue with him is he's averaging about a strikeout a game, 20 strikeouts in 21 games.
Right. So you got, again, to me, Cleveland and Atlanta are the same exact team right now.
Yeah.
They both have hitters, but they're pitching, at least starting pitching, you can hit off these guys with no issues. But their relief and their closing, it's what's saving them in the long run in these games. But if the bats are not hot for them, they are losing. That's just what it is.
And unfortunately, it hasn't been. And by the way, Met fans, and I know – Alphonse is going to hate me for saying this. Travis d'Arnaud filling in pretty nicely in Atlanta. Boy's got 5 home runs in Atlanta so far. Going through the rest of the teams right now, you have the Baltimore Orioles and the Yankees, as you and I stated, probably the two of the best teams in the American League East. Toronto's kind of having a bit more issues than I thought they would. But Baltimore 15-7, again, getting their production from some unexpected places. I mean, Colton Cowser and Jordan Westberg have been lighting it up. Their rotation has been holding it down with their best pitchers in John Means, Kyle Bradish, and Tyler Wells all on the sidelines. And again, we talked about Jackson Holliday only going 1 for 30 so far to start his career. The Guardians at 16-6. The Brewers have been
My sleeper team.
14-6, leading the Central. They're second in the major leagues in batting average and OPS, averaging almost 6 runs a game. It's going to be very interesting to see how their pitching holds up with D.O. Hall recently going on the injured list with a knee sprain. And they're going to come in and play the Yankees this upcoming weekend. But the Milwaukee Brewers have been one of the biggest surprises, and I did not think we were going to talk about this team this year, but you want to talk about one of the biggest surprises in Major League Baseball so far in the month of April? The Red Sox starting rotation.
Oh, yeah. I
Cutter Crawford, Brian Bellow, and Tanner Houck.
Hate to give them credit.
Cutter Crawford has started 5 games. with an ERA of 0.66 in 27 and one-thirds innings. And Tanner Houck, who I didn't even know who that guy was until I was looking up stats today, four games, 1.35 ERA in 26.2 innings. And then Brian Bello, who I'd kind of heard of last year, was doing some good things last year, 3.04 ERA in 26.2 innings in five games. I mean, the record isn't great. They're 13-10.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think anybody expected, again, we talked about it, 10-3 on the road.
Right. So I think this is a different team than the, obviously, than the last two teams we were speaking about, where their issue is more so if the bats aren't hot for them, they're not going to win. This is the case where pitching in the long run is getting them through these games. I mean, it speaks for itself. Overall, as a team, they have a 2.52 ERA. That's insane. To go through the first month of baseball being played, your team is sitting at a 2.52 ERA with a whip of 1.12. It's unheard of for the first month of baseball. Unheard of. So what's keeping them in games, for me at least, is their pitching. That's what's keeping them in games. Now, if you go to the batting, your slugging percentage is at 3.94. It's pretty decent. You're averaging overall 228 overall. Your hottest hitter right now is Jaren Duran. With a 2.81 average, his OPS is 758 with a WAR of 1.2. I mean, you can't ask for anything more out of this guy. So with, what, 9 RBIs, 1 home run, like the rest of the stat line doesn't really jump off the screen to you. 27 hits, perfect. 96 at-bats with, you know, 15 runs. Okay, cool. Some of those stat lines don't really jump off to you, but what's keeping them in the game so far is their pitching and their bullpen. So,
yeah.
I mean, again, this is just power rankings now through, you know, almost 25 games of baseball played. But you can't ignore the fact that that 2.52 ERA is what's keeping them one of the best teams, probably a team that can climb further up in the American League East. It definitely can happen, especially with Baltimore's bullpen, which I'll pull up Baltimore real quick. Baltimore's stat line for their pitching right now, they're sitting at a 3.84 ERA overall as a team. That can easily be caught up by Boston. Easily. And then if you look at the Yankees, who are also in the same division, we're currently sitting at 2.95 overall. So it's not that far-fetched for Boston to catch up. It's really not that far-fetched. I do expect something out of Boston. In the long run, for them, it's kind of the reverse. The pitching is keeping them in, but the bats are just not that hot for them.
And pitching is what lasts mostly over a season. Again, we were talking about with Cleveland and Atlanta. You know, it's a question of how well is their offense going to continue to, especially more so with Cleveland, you know, because we know that Atlanta still has Sale and Morton and Freed, right? And we expect them to kind of figure it out. And we know what the offense in Atlanta can do. But in regards to the Guardians, can that offense continue to carry them over a 162-game season? But when we're talking about pitching, it's a little bit different. It's every 5 days, it's a different pitcher. You know, so it's a little bit more of they can carry you. And it's going to be interesting because I don't think anyone expected for the Boston Red Sox to be in the conversation as one of those teams. And right now, obviously, looks like they could at least cause some damage in the American League East. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they play out in the entire American League. I mean, right now, Orioles, Yankees, Guardians. I mean, the Central between the Tigers and the Royals. Again, another two teams that I think now respect to really be talking about. You know, which one of them is going to make it into the wild card? The Kansas City Royals would be one of the better run differentials as well, plus 36. The Rangers are kind of treading water right now until their starting rotation gets healthy. But the Texas Rangers aren't looking great at 12-11. The Mariners were a team that people didn't expect a lot out of, sitting at 500. You know, the Houston Astros have tanked. You know, so you've got like three non-factors in the AL West. At least one definite non-factor in the AL Central in the White Sox. So there's an opportunity for the Red Sox to maybe sneak in and be that third team in the AL East that causes some kind of a problem, especially come, you know, July, August, and very early September. You know, the National League as well, you know, that AL East, that NL East, I should say, the Phillies are nipping at the Braves' heels. And for as bad as the beginning of the Mets season has been, they're still right in the thick of it. They're 12-10. Yeah. They're third in the NL East. And if you really think about it, they'd be third in about any division in baseball right now, because the Central, the Brewers and the Cubs are running away with it. And the Reds are 12-10, same as the Mets. Yeah. And in the West, they'd be right in there with the Dodgers, the Padres, and the Diamondbacks. You know, no team has really, I mean, outside of what we're seeing from the Guardians, and what we've seen in the beginning of the season from the Orioles and the Yankees, there's been no real team that's like jumped off the page like this dominant team that has it all figured out. Philly's got problems. Harper's going on paternity leave for his third child. Congratulations to the Harper family. But how much is the Phillies lineup going to miss Harper? Right. You know, can the Braves offense turn it on? You know, are the Brewers, you know, a hot start and going to come back to it? We saw what happened with the Pirates. The Pirates started super hot.
Super hot.
And then fell back to earth pretty fast.
Yeah, now they're fourth in the NL Central.
Right. So for me, I think, you know, here I was looking through a lot of the different power rankings that are out right now around baseball, and a lot of them kind of have the Braves 1 and the Yankees 2. I kind of, and it has nothing to do with bias, I know, I kind of have the Yankees 1.
Okay.
And the reason being is because I think what we've seen out of Stroman, what we've seen out of Cortez, and what we've seen out of Rodon give me a little bit stronger of a foundation than what we've seen so far out of Atlanta starting pitching. And again, pitching is going to get too far. The offense has been struggling. I mean, Glaber's not hitting. Mm-hmm. Rizzo has been a mess. I know there's been some rumors of maybe Goldschmidt to the Yankees, you know, going that he's going into a free agency year. You know, Judge hasn't been hitting. Juan Soto's been a monster.
I'll let you finish, but we're going to get into that real quick.
Yeah, I think Soto's been a monster, which I think is a good thing, obviously, for us right now, because he's been carrying it. But I also think it's a bad thing, because, you know, Scott Boras is clocking every single one of those games where Juan Soto's the best player, and Juan Soto's performance is basically make or break to whether or not the Yankees win, and he's going to use that at the end of the year to say, well, this is what we want. And if it wasn't for Juan Soto, where are you, right? So – selfishly, I kind of think from a business perspective, Judge and Glaber and Rizzo and all of them need to kind of start coming together and gestating and really kind of making an impact, because the better Juan Soto is for this team, the harder it's going to be to keep him at the end of the year.
Yeah, and see, and this is what I kind of wanted to bring up with the whole Juan Soto, and ties into the power rankings and everything. Right now, and I was talking to my dad about this, we look like geniuses for this Juan Soto trade. We look like complete geniuses. I know we gave up a lot. I know a lot of Yankee fans didn't necessarily love the trade when we went for Juan Soto, but it's proven in the long run it's been helping us. I mean, to just look at his batting right now, where Soto is pretty much leading. He's running away with the team leader. He is batting at a 3.22 batting average. 20 RBIs, who he's now became the youngest to hit 500 RBIs, career RBIs. One of the youngest. His on-base percentage is at a 439. He has 28 hits. This is, what more could you ask for out of Juan Soto for this team? There's nothing more that you can ask for him. At 87 at-bats so far, at 28 hits, 14 runs. Like, you can't ask for anything more than that. He's pretty much, anytime he steps up with somebody on base, it's guaranteed for him to have an RBI. Guaranteed.
While Volpe, I know his stats look better because he is the regular starter.
Yes.
Oswaldo Cabrera is technically the second best hitter on the team, average-wise, with a 290 average. Okay, right. Oswaldo Cabrera in 69 at-bats, 19 games, 20 hits, 4 doubles, 3 home runs, hitting to a tune of 290 with a 324 on-base percentage, an 803 on-base plus slugging, which is also the second best OPS on the team. By comparison, Anthony Volpe has a 766 OPS, mm-hmm. And Verdugo has 769, Oswaldo with 803.
Another person that's kind of turned it on as of late, Verdugo, especially on defense.
Right. So, you know, we need a lot. I mean, Rizzo is hitting 227. Mm-hmm. Not great, right? He has 20 hits, 21 strikeouts, 1 home run, 8 RBIs. Soto's got 5. Judge's got 3. But the problem with Judge, and I think why a lot of people have said Judge is struggling, granted, he's only hitting 174, so, like, that jumped off the page at you. Right. But it's because it hasn't been consistent. I think the thing with Juan Soto has been, it seems like every game you're looking at the stat sheet, you're looking at the box score, he's got 2 hits.
Right.
You know, he's got a hit, 2 hits minimum. He's getting on base. He's doing what he needs to do. And the same with Volpe. I think the thing with Judge is we're only really hearing about the big games. He's got 15 hits and 86 at-bats. Gleyber's got 16 hits and 83.
So for me with Judge is this. For me, it's, I think Judge finally has, I'm not going to say he's accepted that he has to take a back seat, but it's visibly seen. Because Juan Soto basically right now is carrying the team as far as hitting goes. Between Soto, Volpe, Verdugo getting on, Cabrera, even to a degree, Stanton's starting to find his rhythm. So you arguably have four or five guys who are hitting for this team at bat. They're getting at least 2 hits at bat. Then you have everybody else. You've got Wells, who's his average is not looking too good. You got Trevino, whose average is at 250, right where a major leaguer should be at. And then you got Gresham, who doesn't really play that much. Jones, who hasn't played really at all. He's had 4 at bats so far. But overall, you have a slugging of 363, which is not good, it's not bad, it's not great either.
Your I don't like the team overall. Average of 234.
Yeah, I don't like the team average either. That team average needs to be higher, but I think by May, we'll see that jump. We'll see that jump to a 260, a 270, somewhere around there. That's still not where we should be as a team, at least not with these names that we have, with these hitters. But it's the average that we should be at right now at this juncture of the season.
Yeah, I mean, and the pitching has really saved us. I mean, our best pitcher in terms of wins, Luke Weaver's got a lot of wins in relief. But Rodon pitching to a 2.70 ERA, I'm very glad to see that. Stroman has been great. 6 runs in 22 and a third innings. has stricken out 19 and 2.42 ERA. Clark Schmidt, as you said, has been great for a back end of the rotation starter, a 3.15 ERA. And listen, Luke Gill has been pretty okay. I don't like his walk numbers, 17 walks in 19 and two-thirds innings. To me, that's the biggest issue with Luke Gill. Six runs and eight hits, 29 strikeouts is fantastic in 19 innings, but those walk numbers really need to get down.
Yeah.
2.75 ERA out of him. So when you really think about it, of our five starters, you know, Cortez has got the highest ERA in 3.41, and that's because he did have a couple of rocky starts to start the season. And then it's Clark Schmidt at 3.15. Stroman's doing what he needs to do. Rodon is pitching to the degree and to the level that we wanted Rodon to pitch to.
Absolutely.
And Gill has been a great number five guy. And that's what's really saved this team is our pitching.
Yeah, for sure. The starting pitching isn't the problem with the Yankees. It's relief and closing that's been the problem so far. Clay Holmes is kind of starting to find his rhythm. He's sitting at a 1.18 whip, an ERA. Well, he has no ERA right now, looking at the stats here. But 11 innings pitched, 12 hits. The 12 hits kind of stands out to you with 8 Ks. So, I mean, Clay Holmes coming in and being our closer, it's been, for the most part, has been working. For the most part. There's really not too much you can complain about. There's things that we can nitpick as Yankee fans, but overall, as a baseball fan, there's not too much that we can complain about. But the starting pitching,
we have a good weekend coming up.
Right. We have a great weekend coming up. And this is – and to kind of – you know, I'll throw it to you for your final thoughts. But to kind of close out with this, for the Yankees, this is a series that they should – I'm not going to say run away with because anything can happen in Major League Baseball, but this is a series that you need to win. Yesterday was a hiccup. You got to come back strong this game, the next game, and you need to win this series. I think it's a 4-game series. You need to close that out.
Yeah, we got Stroman starting tonight.
Yeah.
Stroman starting tonight, Schmidt tomorrow, Cortez. And this is what I don't like. I don't like the lineup of the rotation, right? Because you've got Stroman, Schmidt, and Cortez going against Oakland. And then we go into the heavy season of the heavy series of the weekend against Milwaukee, and we have Gil, Rodon, and we have Stroman going on Sunday. So, you know, to me, it's just like I'd like to see Cortez pitch against Milwaukee. Cortez isn't going to pitch again until Baltimore. When we go to Baltimore on the road, because we got Milwaukee followed by Baltimore. To me, the next three series are big. Milwaukee, Baltimore, Detroit. Now, Detroit hasn't been great, but listen, Tarik Skubal might be one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball right now. Pitching to a 1.82 ERA. Casey Mize right now is running away with comeback player of the year. Pitching to a 2.95 ERA in 4 starts. And if we run into either one of them, you know, I know we're running into Mize on Friday, May 3rd. That's the big one. Next Friday, we're running into Mize. I don't know if we're running into Skubal or not on Saturday or Sunday. But Milwaukee, Baltimore, and Detroit. This 10 games between April 26th and May 5th, it's really going to shift a lot of things, because after that, it's Houston, Tampa Bay, Minnesota, Chicago, Seattle. It's 4 series where we should kind of beat up on some teams.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and then the next best series we have is against San Diego near the end of May. Then we get about another 3 series off because we got the Angels. The Giants, while the Giants are okay, they're not great. And then Minnesota again. And then that's when we run into the meat of our schedule in June. Dodgers, Royals, Red Sox, Orioles, Atlanta. Yeah. 5 big series back to back to back to back to back running us through June. So we really need to take advantage, like you said, of these series against Oakland. We got a tough series, next 10-game stretch, but then we've got a couple of series where we should be able to take advantage of some teams. And you got – you and I know this more than anything. You got to win the games that you should win.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to win the games. That's definitely the agenda here. Like I said, anything can happen in Major League Baseball. We've seen it. But these Oakland, I'm not going to count out Detroit, Minnesota, Chicago. Those are teams that you should be beating for sure. For sure, hands down.
Minnesota's 8-13. Chicago's 3-19. Detroit's good. But again, their away record has been really good. Seattle, I know it's 500, but they don't have a monster of a team. We should be able to get some wins off of them. The Angels have a losing record. Houston's got a losing record. You know, the Giants have a losing record. So, I mean, we have to beat up on the teams that we can beat up on. And that's right. The thing, because when you look at what Baltimore's got coming up really quickly before we wrap up here, Baltimore has got Oakland right after us. Right now, they're playing the Angels. They won yesterday 4-2. They've got the Angels, and then they've got Oakland. Then after us, they've got Cincinnati, Washington, Arizona. So they've got some winnable series as well.
Right.
And so they're going to rack up on wins. I mean, they've got us for four games, but then it's Cincinnati, Washington, Arizona, Toronto, Seattle. You know, then they go into a series against St. Louis in May. You know, but when I look at Baltimore's schedule, I mean, it's – I don't know why Baltimore can't run away between now and the middle of July with the record. I mean, their worst series based on what we're seeing now is a three-game series against Toronto – a three-game series against St. Louis, three games against Boston, and then Atlanta, Philly, Cleveland, and Texas, and that's it.
Yeah. They have pretty much a favorable May for the most part. Despite a couple of teams, you know, Chicago, that's a winnable series. St. Louis is a winnable series. Towards the end, you do have Boston for three games, and then they have Tampa Bay. So Boston, that three-game slate with Boston is going to be tough. Tampa Bay, yeah, I mean, we've already said it. Tampa Bay is not the team that we thought they were going to be, or at least what they normally are, should I say. St. Louis is a winnable one. Chicago is a winnable one. Toronto is kind of iffy, but it should be winnable. Arizona also iffy, but winnable. And then you have the Nationals and Cincinnati to start out May. Cincinnati's a tough team, so that might be a little bit of an issue. But then going into June, again, you see these same teams again. Toronto, Tampa Bay, Atlanta is going to be their test. Once they get to Atlanta, they have a string of games that are going to be very hard for them, which is Atlanta, Philly, us. They play Houston right after the Yankees. Then they play Cleveland. And then who knows where the Texans are going to be, but then you play the Texans. And then you play Seattle. That's tough for your June. It's a tough start to your June. So right now they're sitting at 15-7. We're a half a game behind. Honestly, this is a race for the NL East. For the AL East, excuse me. This is a race for the AL East between the Yankees and Baltimore, and then also you just can't count out Boston because Boston's bullpen is what's keeping them in games, and who's to say what's going to happen between now and June. We could sit here and be talking about three completely different teams all for a race. We could be sitting here talking about Baltimore being a wild card. Who knows? We don't know.
I want to end with the question I'm probably going to ask you and Alphonse a lot this season.
All right.
When does Mike Trout get traded?
Hmm, man, Man. Alphonse will probably love me for this, but if I'm the Mets and you're going to take a swing, I think that's your swing that you go for. I think that's what you go for. Trout being a Jersey kid, you know, in that tri-state area, it's a nice little homecoming. The Mets are in, if they don't sign Pete Alonso back, I think that's who you go for. Now, when does it happen is the real question. Don't know. I don't know if you do it midway through the season, which kind of indicates, which I think we alluded to this last episode. If you're Pete Alonso, if you don't sign, you know, throughout the season, if there's no talk during the season, then pretty much you're on your way out the door. It could happen midseason. Maybe it happens during the winter, but all in all, Angels just have to cut their losses and get whatever they can get for Mike Trout. I know they don't want to give him up. He's a franchise player, but at this point, you're not doing either side any favors for this man or the team.
Trout has a full no trade clause. And I know he had an interview before spring training this year where he said that, you know, like his idol, Derek Jeter, he always envisioned playing his entire career with one team. And he's always said that he thinks making the playoffs and trying to win a World Series with the Angels would be more fulfilling than trying to take, as he says, the easy way out.
There we go. He is signed through 2030 with that contract. I guess the question is, does Mike Trout change his mind and want out first, or does Artie Moreno finally break and trade Trout or try to trade Trout first?
I don't think Trout waves the white flag. I think it just comes down to the team. I think Artie just says, listen, it's just time to move on. Because at some point, GM, owner, wherever in any sport, when things have ran its course, it's ran its course. I mean, I know this is not a basketball podcast, but we're kind of seeing the same thing with LeBron James. LeBron has ran his course with the LA Lakers. Point blank period. Now, in the case of Trout, you're still going to get great years out of him because right now he's in his prime. He'll be, what, 32, 33? You're going to get a few more good years out of him. It's not like he's had any major injuries. He's still capable of leading you to a World Series surrounded by the right team. But I do think ultimately it comes down to the team trading him and not really Trout asking for a trade. It's one of those shockers that we get. So, I don't know where Pete went, but I guess we'll end it here. This has been the Dog Days of Baseball podcast. Make sure to check us out on your sports. Also, shouts out to Pete. His show is coming up soon, so make sure y'all check that out as well. Games to watch this week. Probably going to go up. Oh, there we go.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened. I was wrapping it up. I was like, I don't know. Pete's coming back.
Went on the Fritz, everything reloaded. I heard everything. I was about to ask you a question too about something you said, and then everything just went on the Fritz on me. But go ahead, lead us out.
Yeah. So the game to watch for me, that's a non-Yankee game for today. I know we do a lot of Yankee bias.
I mean, you can't tell I'm a Yankee fan, can you?
Right. Yeah. So I think the game to watch tonight would be the Red Sox and the Guardians. I mean, again, they're pretty much the same team. Well, they're not the same team, pretty much. One side has pitching, the other side has hitting. We'll see what happens with that. And let's see if Cleveland can, because are they on the road? No, Cleveland is at home. Boston is on the road. So we'll see two teams who are genuinely great on the road. We'll see if that that streak can keep up. And also, you have the Phillies and the Reds tonight would be another game. Two teams trying to fight for their position in their respective divisions. And Mets and the Giants. Let's see if the Mets can keep this hot streak going. I know they lost recently, but let's see what happens with the Mets.
Yeah, and I think when you have a team like the Giants who's kind of middling right now, mm-hmm. I think this is a good series to watch. Obviously, I agree with you that Guardians and Red Sox series going to be an incredible game to watch. I am interested in that Milwaukee and Pittsburgh Pirates series because, again, Milwaukee's coming in. Yankees are going to Milwaukee this mm-hmm. weekend to play Milwaukee. So I'd love to see a little bit of a weakened Milwaukee team. The Dodgers and the Nationals, I just want to see how the Dodgers do.
Yeah.
Nationals middling at 10 and 11. You would think that the Rays and Tigers series would be better given, hopefully the Rays would be better. If I'm just looking though around, I kind of want to see how badly the Orioles beat up on the Angels tonight. But for this weekend, to me, again, when we're looking at, starting on Friday, I'm really interested in, besides the Yankees and Milwaukee series this weekend, I'm really interested in that Guardians-Braves series.
Yeah.
This weekend, I think that one's going to be a really great series to watch, as well as the Phillies-Padres series.
Yeah.
This weekend is also going to be to watch. Because, again, if you have more teams that can beat up on the Padres, it makes the job for the Dodgers a little easier. They don't have to do as much. They give themselves a little bit of a wiggle room. But Grizz said all the thanks to everybody. Again, thanks to the Your Sports Show Network. Next week, Thursday night, will be episode 3, and it will be the three of us, the Territorian Alphonse Stevens, finally back from road assignment. All three of us will be live next week, Thursday night. Stay tuned to social media for times when that recording will happen. We will be live on Facebook and social media. Two last things before we go. Let's go, Yanks. And again, as I said in the beginning, if you're in a New York podcaster and you got a problem with New York podcasters, we got a couple of trains you can jump in front of if you want.
It is.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank y'all. Good afternoon.